Live from Burbank, California, where NASA fabricated the moon landing, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, water is spewing from his ice volcano. Mark Maron!
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, people. Here we go. It's 6 past the hour. This is the Mark Maron Show. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. The streaming party, the blog party has begun at markmarcmaron.com. Go there and hang out. Call us at 877-520-1150 if you want to. Hey, I just want to say thanks to Anna out there at the University of Illinois for the lovely gift basket. She says, I've missed you terribly. You all sound great, though I do miss Riley. You can still hear Riley. I don't know where you are or what you're listening to, but he's on in the morning, so you can go find him there, but we appreciate you finding us. And if I get another gift basket, folks, I'm going to explode. I'm eating nougat from Oregon. I've got Marion Berry jelly from Portland or somewhere, and they just sent this box from where did you say that was from? Their Zingerman's in Chicago. It's got salami and some sort of amplified Snickers thing that I've already eaten half of, so now I'm already stuttering and my synapses aren't working properly because I had an espresso before I got here. Your name again?
My name is Jim.
Nice to see you. Yeah, thanks for coming by again.
You're not discouraging the free stuff, are you?
Not at all, because Jim, I know how much you love to take stuff home, but only healthy stuff for Jim. More lavender chocolate bars and anything that's sort of pseudo-hippie environmental kind of wheat stuff.
I'll take a jar of grass.
Jar of grass is great. Fresh-cut grass. Jim loves that. So let's do the this thing first. And you know what? Let me tell you what's going to happen on this show first. Let me tell you that. You know what I'm going to deal with tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit in a little while about The Sopranos because I did watch that, which I think led to me calling my wife a bitch as a joke, but might not have been a joke because I've been watching too much Sopranos. We'll investigate that in a little while. I also watched Big Love, which I thought was a little stupid, but I did like the creepy compound stuff. Also, the Washington Press Corps, the gridiron roast was last night, which made me nauseous. I'll talk about that. It was actually on Saturday. And for the benefit of our large Latin audience, we'll get a taste of what I sound like in Spanish from the commentary translation on the DVD of Left of the Dial. Also, for those of you who went to the improv and got a surprise Latin treat, I was on the Late Show on Saturday night at the improv, and my show was hijacked by Carlos Mencia, who decided to take up my time and my night at the improv to use his carte blanche from his basic cable fame and do his little whatever it was hour and a half long exploration of why people poop, which was good, and a lot of people enjoyed it. And I'm not sure why he did it what I did to deserve that, but I want to apologize to my fans who showed up because I left. After about 40 minutes, I left. When he brought his friend up, his drunk friend, to tell jokes, I had to go. I know he tried to bring me up in the middle of his set, and I was outside of the room when I came in. That all of a sudden, the opportunity was gone. It was offensive to me because it's like, it's Saturday night. You want to work stuff out? I understand, you know, apparently you're big and famous, but what do you got to do it on my time for? It's not something I need to air here.
Well, now you're never going to figure out why people poop.
No, I listened. I understand. It's because they have to. But that takes a long time to explain, and it was very funny.
Funnier than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I told you. Maybe you should buy Carlos Mencia's CD or watch his show at least. I've known that guy for years. We've sort of started around the same time, I think. Yeah. But I just think when you're 45 or 50 or however old he is and, you know, talking about why people poop, I don't know. I personally wouldn't do it. And I got a sneaking suspicion that he did it on purpose to hijack my show. Maybe he didn't because he said he listened to the show, but I'm not sure he did because he mentioned the episode Andy Kindler was on. And then I started thinking about him mentioning that to me.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking that Andy Kindler had mentioned him in a not-so-positive way. So then I started thinking that maybe he did this as some sort of, like, I'll show Maron. But I don't know. He did say he respected me, and I got no problem with him, but I did leave. And the next time I perform for my fans here on the show, I will do a special night somewhere where I won't get hijacked. You would think after 20, 21 years in the business that on a Saturday night you wouldn't just get bumped. It hurt me. I found the whole thing disrespectful and humiliating. But here we go. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events here before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt told Americans to begin storing canned tuna and powdered milk under their beds in case of a deadly bird flu outbreak. Levitz also wanted you to remember that nothing goes better with dried milk and canned tuna than Ritz. Ritz, the official snack cracker of Armageddon. Toxicology reports show that the recently departed Slobodan Milosevic may have taken an unprescribed drugs intentionally in order to worsen his condition. As a result, Milosevic will not be able to finish producing the Smile album. Yeah. Actor Sean Connery was recovering in the Bahamas after surgery to remove a tumor from his kidney. When he first learned he had a tumor, Connery said he was, quote, shaken but not stirred, end quote. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. There you go.
I loved those jokes. Those are great jokes.
Thanks, man. Black Sabbath, Blondie, Miles Davis, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Sex Pistols, Herb Alpert, and Jerry Moss are inductees. Folks, I'm going to talk about politics as well. The Gridiron Club dinner made me sick. The executive branch, I've got stuff to talk about, but let's do that in a minute because I have a guest in the studio and I'm happy he's here, and I don't want to be rude. And before I bring him on, I want to read an excerpt from a column he wrote about 6 weeks ago. You may have heard about it because this very first line was, quote, I don't support our troops, end quote. Here's a little bit more. I've got no problem with other people, the ones who were for the Iraq war, supporting the troops. If you think invading Iraq was a good idea, then by all means, support away. Load up on those patriotic magnets and bracelets and other trinkets the Chinese are making money off of. But I'm not for the war. And being against the war and saying you support the troops is one of the wussiest positions the pacifists have ever taken, and they're wussy by definition. That was written by our guest, Joel Stein. He's a columnist for the LA Times. He's written for Time Magazine, and you may see him pop up on those VH1 clip shows from time to time. Joel, thank you for being here.
Thanks for reading my column like that. It sounded manlier when you read it. It did. Strong radio voice.
You know, I read the column, and when it happened, we were all talking. We thought initially, man, this is going to cause an avalanche of backlash from the right. This is just going to get them all riled up. And it didn't as much as I would have thought. Michelle Malkin kind of got pissed off.
Yeah.
Ben Stein decided to write a little review.
That guy too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't.
Bill O'Reilly went nuts, though.
And he went nuts, yeah. But it seemed to me it was so polarizing and so off the grid for them that it would have lasted for weeks.
Yeah, I avoided all their shows. They all invited me on.
Why'd you do that? See, because I avoid those shows too. Because you consider yourself a humorist as opposed to a pundit of sorts, or you didn't want to defend yourself.
They're much better at it than me.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's like they're inviting me to a sword fight,
and you don't want to get your cut off.
Yeah, I did like a couple radio shows, and that was plenty.
But I mean, the criticism
was Nightline. I didn't want to do. I'm not so good at being on TV and being like articulate and stuff.
Because it's too, you got to be in sound bites.
You
got to
be smart. Yeah.
Well, you're smart. I mean, let's not, give yourself some credit. I believe that the piece was funny. And when I first heard it, it was something I had said candidly to my staff at times before that it seems not hypocritical per se, but it seems impossible to support the troops without supporting the war and vice versa.
It's a little bit of a cover your ass statement.
It seems to be. I mean, I certainly have nothing against the troops. I understand why the troops are there and who go.
And I hope they're safe, and think we should give them armor and bring them home.
Yes, exactly. But it always seemed a little disingenuous to – it does seem like a cop-out. And the logic of it is the only real response that I read it revolved around who the hell is this kid, this smart-ass ivory tower punk who doesn't know any soldiers, that doesn't know this, that doesn't know that. And that was really the only criticism that I read.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know a lot of soldiers. But I think that, I don't know much about anything. I write about it all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes us similar is that it's not so much not knowing things, but you like to talk from a first person, and you like to make sure you place that first person who is you in the middle of everything you write.
Until I get in trouble. Then I run like a little girl.
Have you gotten...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's kind of bad.
Yeah, it is a little bad. Yeah, I felt a little ashamed.
When have you run?
Well, by not going on like Bill O'Reilly I could have dragged this thing out for months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people kept wanting to talk about it, and I kind of...
So you're the one who actually stifled the backlash.
I tried to stifle the backlash. I kind of tricked O'Reilly because I was kind of busy at the time, and I couldn't do all this stuff. I was at a job, and he asked me to come on. I said, I can probably do it next week.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of waited a whole week, and then Monday came, and I'm like, I was legitimately busy. I'm like, I can't do it today. So he got someone else to go on in my place, and it was like some crazy long-haired UCLA film professor
uh-huh.
who actually didn't agree with me. So,
but did they actually announce him, like, in place of Joel Stein tonight?
It was like, yeah, what do you, you know,
we couldn't get Joel Stein, so we got some hippie guy who will probably say the same thing.
And he didn't, no. He couldn't even find anyone.
Well, that's interesting because I assumed that it was cultural. I assumed that the reason there wasn't a more extensive backlash was because the president was dropping a popularity so quickly that they didn't want to draw any attention at all, even to the extreme left of it, because the war had become so unpopular.
I think so. And then something else happened like that was even crazier the next week that kind of took my
That
place.
Had nothing to do with you.
Yeah, I'm forgetting. Oh, it was the
Cheney blowing the guy's face off?
No, before that.
I think it was before that,
it was the cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, the Muslim
cartoons.
The crazy
cartoons, yeah.
So have you been working on some crazy Allah cartoons?
I had some, you know, because the Iranians wanted the anti-Holocaust the cartoons.
So you're working on that?
I came up with some, and then I thought maybe not for me this week.
Maybe Joel Stein writing them would be too confusing. Did he?
Yeah, he kicked its ass. It was great.
What did he do? I missed it.
He did like a bunch of really offensive Jew, anti-Semitic cartoons.
And as a Jew doing that, that somehow gives it a type of credibility that means that we can take it as tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it was kind of like, what if we just, it was kind of throwing it back in his face. I thought it was really smart because, I mean, if the idea of the Iranian was, how would you in the West respond to, anti-Holocaust cartoons?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, well, we wouldn't go kill people.
Right.
You know, we might not like it, but we wouldn't kill Danish people.
Spiegelman's a very bright guy.
Yeah.
So I'm reading a lot of your columns all at once.
Good. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
If I can
back
recommend
a
way to do it.
Yeah.
Just stay up all night.
It's like a stand-up routine. Then it's like bing, bing, bing. And I know you've contributed.
I call that a marathon.
They're not that long. It didn't take me all night. No. It took me about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I didn't go from the beginning of your career in college.
That's what I recommend.
Oh, okay.
If you do the Uber that way, you really.
So let's talk about this, the essay in the new book, Before the Mortgage, Real Stories of Brazen.
Oh my God, these kids are, how'd you find out about this?
Well, let me just read the whole title of the book.
Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Are you going to detach yourself from it now?
I'm emceeing your show.
Who the hell are these kids who got me involved in this book?
No, they're geniuses.
So the book is called Before the Mortgage, Real Stories of Brazen Loves, Broken Leases, and the Perplexing Pursuit of Adulthood. So you wrote an essay for this collection, right? And now you're mad at them for actually making
really
it to my desk.
No, they're cool, smart people.
And from this, where? Were you talking about them like they're
I met
at
one
a,
of them
a charter
years,
school? Or
I met one of them when they graduated Stanford, where I had gone. And
okay.
She was like asking me for advice on starting a career.
Uh-huh.
I was working at Time Magazine.
And you said, you really want to know? Come on in.
I don't know. It's all a blur from there.
But,
she seemed very nice.
Uh-huh.
And then she started this zine.
Yeah.
And then eventually.
About young adults?
Yeah, it's called Before the Mortgage, her zine. She lives in like, I don't really know. I've only met her once in Minnesota. And then she said, would you write something for it? I said, I don't really write for free, but if you want to grab something I've written in the past, I'll look the other way about the copyright stuff.
So you basically said, yeah, I'll help you out with your career. First of all, be a scumbag and don't contribute to anything that some dumb student would want you to do for nothing. All right, so stay with us, because how long have you been married?
4 years.
All right, so we're in a similar boat, and I'd like to talk about our challenges with adulthood with Joel Stein in just a second. So stick around. We've got the Dick of the Day coming up, too. It's 20 past. Why don't we make it that? How's that? It's AM 1150.
You're listening to a man who can't resist surfing in raw sewage, Mark Maron.
And now he just died of a heart attack to avoid being tried for war crimes. Mark Maron.
That's right, I did. 24 past the hour, you're listening to AM 1150, LA's Progressive Talk. You can blog at markmaron.com, markmaron.com, or call us at 877-520-1150. That's 1150. 877-520-1150. I'm talking to Joel Stein, who is a columnist for the LA Times. He used to be at Time Magazine. Occasionally appears on the VH1 clip shows, which you'll talk to those people. You do those clip shows, they'll interview you.
Those are great. Those I recommend watching also from the beginning all the way to the end.
Well, I did that. I've got the video collection, the Joel Stein on pop-up video collection. I've done those things, and you literally, I motor mouth. I'm really bad at talking to reporters because I do exactly what they want them to. I provide them plenty of opportunity to take what I said out of context.
We do love that.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable what you people do, and you have an agenda, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We want to bring you down.
To make yourselves look better.
Bring us up.
Yeah.
That's all we want. I've
seen it happen over and over again.
First day of J school.
Yet I so like the attention that I will continue to give you guys whatever you want.
Everyone likes to talk. I mean, you walk up to people after like their husband died, and they just want to tell you their story. Gatorades. It's just a human thing.
Well, they like the attention.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have done those shows where I'll talk for 15, 20 minutes, right. And all they'll take is they'll have me pop on going, yeah, I liked it, but it was silly with the cookie. And then, you know, it's like, that's completely out of context. And I was part of a half-hour conversation.
Yeah, context is overrated.
Yeah. Oh, don't get deep with me, Stan.
Yeah, I will.
All right, you and your Stanford that. Jewish thing. It's all you read the context and no context.
No, what is that?
You never read it?
No, is that what is that?
Apparently, you're out of context. That's the context and no context. Are very maybe you should. I don't remember the guy that wrote it, but my buddy Sam Lipside, who's a novelist,
right.
He turned me on to it, and I wanted to talk to him about it, but I had no idea what it meant. I've read. I saw you reference Foucault in one of your essays, and I appreciate that. And I've tried to read him. I've gleaned things from the postmodernists.
That's all you got. That's all you need.
That's what they're about, isn't it?
Yeah.
They would say that that's postmodern of you, just to glean fragments that you choose to put
exactly.
in the context that you want them to be.
Yeah, you're gonna twist it your own way anyway.
Wow. So let's talk about marriage in this collection, and how you treated that that young woman who was just looking for a mentor, and you demanded her that she pay you.
Yes. It worked out for both of us. I think she's got this book coming out
before the mortgage. Real stories of brazen loves, broken leases, and the perplexing pursuit of adulthood. I just have to be honest with you. I was married once before.
How'd that
and,
go?
Well, I really was not prepared because it wasn't clear to me that you were supposed to stop dating other people.
Oh, that is a rule.
Yeah. And then I got married this time.
You listened more closely to the vows?
Oh, man. I am so on that. And, you know, it's so much better when you're monogamous and you're not polluted with betrayal and mistrust.
Honestly, it is. Okay.
I was ready to sacrifice the strange drunken sex and stalls at bathrooms.
Right.
I was willing to sacrifice, stalkers. You know, who you have sex with once and then right. are like, why? Why aren't you leaving her? Why? You know, I was willing to sacrifice all the excitement of that chaos for being in love with one person because I think it's tremendous. And I just bought a house about 2 years ago. And again, as a person who was not prepared to become an adult, had no idea you didn't have to have all the money.
No, it's a weird rule, isn't it? You know, in fact, you no longer need any of the money.
I know.
Which is even crazier.
If you just have good credit, you can get yourself a house.
Oh, yeah.
So what are some of the challenges that you've noticed in our generation? You're a little younger than me, but not that much.
The challenges?
In terms of becoming an adult. Like, I mean,
we don't have to anymore. There's a guy I know writing a book called Rejuveniles.
Uh-huh.
And you can have kids and everything. You're still playing video games. You never admit that you become an adult.
I know.
It's horrible.
And now you see
we should be suiting up. Like, we should be.
Yeah.
Seriously, I remember I was watching, like, the Dick Van Dyke Show, and then I watched Mad About You, and I was like, oh, Dick Van Dyke's got to be, you know, he's in the 40s, he's an adult. Paul Reiser's maybe in his 20s. They're the exact same age.
Huh.
And one has an even stupider job. Like, Dick Van Dyke is a comedy writer, and Paul Reiser's making documentaries, and yet he seems so much younger.
Well, right. There's a generational difference. It was a different era, and there seemed to be, it seemed
why
like everybody...
Why aren't we wearing hats and suits and, like...
Right.
Come home for dinner.
No, we turn our baseball hats backwards and have scooters. And what the hell? I cannot handle hearing another grown-up say, what kind of backpack is that? A backpack?
Wow.
Who the hell's walking around with backpacks? It used to be briefcases.
Yeah, and I don't know anyone with a briefcase anymore.
I know. My wife has a backpack. And what are we, 10?
Is it like a
backpack?
Little black backpack thing?
No, are you kidding? She's got a huge backpack.
She's
a
big woman.
A computer.
Yeah, she needs a big
She's
backpack.
A big, beautiful woman.
Yeah,
she's,
no,
not
I didn't
that, she's not big
woman.
In the big
yeah,
sense.
No, no, no.
She's
I meant
tall.
She's... How tall is she?
She needs a big... She's like 6'7".
No, she's not. How
it's unbelievable. I'm a dwarf next to her. I'm the strange, pervy little Jewish man that follows her around.
She's a good
we gotta go.
Feet, right?
We hang on a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we're talking to Joel Stein. It's 29 past, and it's AM 1150.
And now back to a coupon clipping elitist, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. That was an interesting one. 35 past. We're talking to Joel Stein, columnist for the L.A. Times, and he's written for a lot of other things. You can see the
anyone
whole...
will pay me. I'll
yeah,
write for.
Apparently even college students who just want to know how to get into the business. And I'll tell you. Yeah, give me $10. I'll give you some advice. I'll shed some wisdom on you. Joel Stein can be found at joelstein.com, is it? Or that's Joel Stein, or what is it?
I haven't touched that thing in 5 years. My friend from high school made it for me. I don't know how to make a website.
Joel, you can't keep copping out with these excuses.
I have only so much time.
You know, you just bought a house. You got a wife who you love.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, don't be cheap. Throw a couple bucks out to somebody who designs a website.
All right, but I got to pay for the house.
Okay, then still, I think that you could find somebody. There's got to be a crazy Joel Stein fan. That's how you find a stalker. There's got to be a Joel Stein stalker out there. You can go to LATimes.com to see his recent writing, and you can go to the website designed by his high school buddy to see the old stuff. Yeah. But there's got to be a Joel Stein stalker out there.
Who can work a website?
Yeah, that's what you do.
I meet the stalkers, and then they get me to write for their little books. That's how it goes for me.
Well, there's a quid pro quo there. Look, I usually work for money, but if you know how to
make a website.
Exactly.
I bet they can. They're young.
Well, of course. Yeah. That's what I'm telling you. That's how people want to get involved. And then they get very close to you, and then all of a sudden it's like Selena and her manager. What?
Oh, man.
Something to look forward to, being shot by a fan. That's a great thing, Joel.
A good ending to your little Wikipedia
entry,
yeah.
Oh, my Wikipedia entry.
So what's yours like?
It's all right. I don't know who did it, but I'm happy they did. So let's talk just a couple minutes about some of your columns.
More about me.
The Warriors and Wusses thing, we talked about that. It was provocative. Now, when you provoke, like we were talking about that before, and people say, I hate you, Joel Stein, you're Satan, and you're a Jew, and you make me sick.
Right.
Does it hurt your feelings?
You know what? I got...
honestly.
No, when they just say you're a stupid Jew, that's not so bad.
Right.
But when they, you know, you get some smart people who really hit you where it hurts. And, or I got like a bunch of stuff from troops or the people's parents whose kids died in the war.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's upsetting. I feel bad. So
did you write back to any of them?
Yeah, I wrote back to as many as I could.
You did? And what did you say?
I just laughed at them.
No, stop.
No,
it.
I didn't. No, I tried to explain myself, which of course didn't go well. And I was like.
And they came back at you, didn't you?
Some of them did. Some of them were really appreciative. You know, it depends.
Okay. Now, what is your opinion of this? Because I'm going to talk about this when I throw you out of the room. Because I'm going to talk about The Sopranos, and I know
don't ruin it for me. I haven't seen it.
I know. I'll honor
me.
That. I'm not gonna do
You're
anything right
me
now.
With your hands.
I'm not gonna. But the Gridiron Club dinner. This is a dinner where Republicans, Democrats, and the press
finally come together for dinner.
Finally, what do you think? That's a holy trinity of denial and the illusion.
They finally can just sit down and talk.
To me, it's like just a gratuitous display of elitism and complete disconnectedness from the American people.
Now,
as a journalist,
dinner where the journalists bring like a joke date, like I'm bringing Monica Lewinsky or I'm bringing.
Well, they do that, but they also
Nicole
put
Smith.
On sketches.
Yeah, yeah.
Barack Obama sang a song, which hurt my feelings. I don't even know what the song was, but just that he's up there pandering in that way. George Bush gets cued about his own stupidity, which is just feeding into the lie that he's a victim.
It's everything you think happens at like an Ivy League school. It's like a hasty pudding kind of, it's bad.
It is bad, isn't
it? It's like
it?
A Masonic thing. It's like some kind of weird lodge where people do little sketches.
That's it. That's the weird lodge.
It's what you think happens in the anals of power? Is that a word?
It's they can't
That's
hide
not the right
it.
Word at all.
It's the asses of power, but you're close.
You.
Yeah. But it is exactly that. So would you go to that? Were you invited to that? Could you go to that if you wanted to?
You know, I could probably through Time Magazine, I could probably hook that up.
You were at Time Magazine. Did you know Josh Ramos?
Yeah, I saw him a couple days ago. He's in
you
town.
You did? He's
yeah.
in town. You guys buddies?
He was in town for a couple. He got me my job at Time.
No kidding.
Ramo. No
Josh.
Less.
Josh Ramo was the youngest editor-in-chief of Time Magazine?
No, he never got that far. He was the world editor.
The world editor?
Yeah.
You know, I used to make fun of that kid on a school bus.
You're from New
Albuquerque. I grew up in Albuquerque.
Oh, they own that town, right?
I knew both his brother. I knew his little sister,
yeah.
Jennifer, who I was in love with.
Yeah.
And I knew Josh when he was very young.
Also very attractive.
And he was just this little kid that used to get on the bus, and he always had snot in his nose, and he was younger than me. And I made fun of him.
Oh, you
and
were
I
wrong.
And I was never nice to him.
You know who he works for right
and
now?
Who?
He is, I don't know if I can say this, it's so secretive. He is a partner at Kissinger & Associates.
See, look at that. Time, Inc. to Kissinger and Associates. And we're just having a conversation.
Planes.
We're just having a conversation about the Freemasons.
Yep.
How about the Trilateral Commission, my friend?
Those are the Jews,
how about
right?
the people that sliced up the world and laid the path to the New World Order, my friends? How about the Illuminati? Maybe I'd ask your buddy Ramo about that. And then say, hey, snot nose, and say that's from Marin. And then call him some sort of freakish Illuminati priest
right.
for the Kissinger.
Someone wrote this all down for me because I'm not going to be able to.
It's on tape. We'll get you a CD
Good,
of
thanks.
It. Now, say hi to Josh if you you talk to him again and tell him no hard feelings. You know, he was young and he did have snot in his nose all the time. But look,
He's totally cleared that up, that problem somehow.
Good. That was before he was a barnstorming madman who flew planes upside down when
he
got bored.
You know he's crazy.
I saw him on Carson Daly. I watched him bore Carson Daly for a half hour. Say hi to him for me. Oh. And say hi to your lovely wife, who I don't know.
She's a big, big fan of yours in all seriousness.
Are you serious?
Yeah, huge.
See, that's nice.
We went to go see the Jerusalem Syndrome together.
Oh, that's right. I remember you told me this once before, Jerusalem Syndrome, my one-man show that was short-lived, but
she likes it better than Dave Attell and Louis C.K. put together. We were just talking about this tonight.
Oh, my God. So are you coming back tomorrow with her?
She's coming back.
Oh,
yeah,
great. I won't be here. Joel Stein, columnist for the L.A. Times. Go to LATimes.com. And if you're a stalker of Joel's, please contact him. He needs a new website. Thanks for coming by, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's move into this. Every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most clearly represent those of our esteemed vice president. So without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Here we go. Today's Dick of the Day truly honors the intention of the award, my friends. Young Jeezy is a rapper. His CD, Let's Get It, was released in July. I didn't get it. I never heard of it. Don't know anything about the guy. I do know he was involved in a shootout over the weekend in Miami and was subsequently charged with 2 counts of carrying a concealed firearm. Friday at 5 a.m., Young Jeezy was involved in a fight with a bunch of others. I'm sure they didn't get up early to get into a fight. They weren't on their way to work. Let's assume they were up all night. Not that it makes a difference, but people get a little punchy with lack of sleep. There were no guns drawn during the fight proper, folks. The gunplay started when some guy walking by tried filming the fight with a video camera. When the shooter refused to turn over his camera, he was shot at. The concerns were not about being caught fighting. The guns were pointed and discharged at the possibility of evidence of the fight existing. When the cops showed up, Jeezy and company scurried off mechanically in 2 SUVs, and they were apprehended and charged. I believe, folks, if the Republicans had their way in Iraq, they would kill all reporters. Scratch that. If they could, they would kill all reporters anywhere that didn't toe the party line. So, for being a selfish sociopath that reflexively honored neocon dictates, Young Jeezy, you are the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Ooh, that was several. I like that Stein fella. We should have him back, and I should let him talk. What do you think? How do you think? All right, so let them eat cake for dessert, Jim.
Jeezy,
Young Jeezy. Let them eat cake for dessert. That's what I say. The Gridiron Club, that's what we were talking about, hosted their 121st annual dinner on Saturday night. Now, the Gridiron Club, for those of you who are just tuning in or those of you who don't know, is a social club for Washington journalists that was established in 1885, all right? Right now, its primary purpose is to hold this dinner once a year, which enables the Washington press and politicians from both sides, including the president, to reaffirm their relationship in a festive atmosphere and to condescend to the concerns and businesses of the American people. It shows that, yes, my friends, it is all a game, and yes, they are all out of touch with the people. They are all elitists that are unashamed and tickled with their power, and in the case of the journalists, their proximity to that power. Now, it's just, I just can't stand it. Even if the jokes were good, some of the jokes weren't bad that the president was doing, but let's be honest, we're in the middle of a global crisis. We're in the middle of a horrendous truth deficit in the culture. And with Bush sitting up there making light of the fact that the press sees him as an idiot, and they all laugh at him, and everyone's laughing and back's laughing, and Barack Obama's singing songs, and people are dressing up like Karl Rove singing songs, and Bush is taking some shots at Cheney about taking shots at his friend in the face, and everyone's having a great time. And what does this do? It just reinforces the Holy Trinity, as I said to Stein, of Republicans and Democrats and journalists. They all need and feed on each other to make sure that not too much truth gets out at any one time, and no matter who is in power, the rules stay the same. The only ones out of the loop are the American people. I just see this as a parade of elitism that is so condescending just by its existence to the American people that all these people in their same room laughing at each other. Doesn't it bother you?
This ain't the Kennedy administration, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Bush doesn't have the charm to make jokes about himself.
But apparently he does because he's getting laughs. He's getting laughs.
People are laughing nervously.
And then, like, I read 2 days later, I read this today. There's something in the Washington Post. A Washington Post staff writer wrote a useless piece of journalism, I guess you could call it, on the executive branch staff being exhausted. You know, the whole article is about the fact that Andrew Card that his judgment might have been impaired or frayed by the fact that his hours are still stifling when it came to the Katrina response and the framing of the Dubai deal, that he was just like, he was just too tired. These guys are just too tired. That's just, this person who wrote this is an apologist for the Bush administration. I refuse to see those people as victims of their workload, victims of poor press. I refuse to see Bush as a victim of his own administration. I just can't look at him that way, and I have to fight when they present themselves. I have to fight when they present themselves as endearing. I have to fight the impulse to go, oh, look, he's being funny, or, oh, that's too bad. Andrew Carr was tired. That's why all those people drowned. I have to fight that and just make sure that I understand that these people are completely out of sync with what the American people need, unlike Russ Feingold, who I like. I like Russ Feingold. He's the only decent man in the Senate. He's a Democrat from Wisconsin. He is proposing a censure of the president for illegally wiretapping Americans without getting authorization from the FISA court, and basically just doing it because he said he could, because he was president and he can do anything. A censure resolution is basically a public reprimand that goes on the congressional record. Now, John Conyers, meanwhile, is in the House, and he's seeking seeking legislation that would ask the Congress to decide whether or not this spying was an impeachable offense. Now, here's the thing that always kills me. Okay, here's the thing that always kills me. How many Democrats have said they support Feingold's proposal? A few. How many have said they would vote for it? None. Now, what have they got to lose? I don't understand why these bastards are so spineless. I don't want to call them all bastards, because honestly, I watched Joe Biden on one of the shows. Who was he with Russert the other day? And Biden, despite the fact that he's bought and owned by the credit card industry, could be a pretty good Democrat. He's got a lot of spunk. He's got a lot of smarts. He's not afraid to speak his mind. But he is and has been turned out by the credit card industry. Fine. But what I don't understand is this is just a public reprimand of the president that takes place on the Senate floor. What the hell have the Democrats got to lose by voting for this thing? Just saying, let's do it. It couldn't be clearer by the response of the American people to this president in terms of his poll ratings that it would be a fine political move to do so. But they still won't do it. I don't understand it. And Bill Frist, his response to the proposal, he said it was a crazy political move that would weaken the U.S. during wartime. Enough of this crap. You know what? If a Republican makes any argument that this president is somehow worthwhile of respect, you should be concerned for their sanity. You should literally look at them and go, I'm concerned about your ability to think straight. So Frist goes on to talk about this proposal, and he said he hoped Al-Qaeda and other enemies of the U.S. were not listening to the infighting going on in the government. Why? Why shouldn't they be listening? Why shouldn't the world be listening? What, we should be ashamed of how democracy works? I mean, someone should ask Bill Frist why he is ashamed of the democratic system that encourages debate, has checks and balances when it works correctly. I mean, he shouldn't be ashamed of democracy. Who knows? Maybe Al-Qaeda will watch this, and one of them will say, maybe we should discuss this blowing this thing up. Maybe we should have a logical debate about this. You got to stop Bill Frist and these Republicans from being ashamed of democracy in support of some other system of government that clearly is not going to look anything like the one we have now. It's going to be some sort of weird corporatocracy, theocracy, plutocracy, any number of crises. I got a lot of crises working there. So what do we got coming up? Do we got things? Short order news? Well, this is a quick one tonight. We're only going till midnight. So I hope you've had fun. I'm going to let some of you guys get some sleep. It's 50 past the hour. You are listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150, 877-520-1150.
Stay tuned for 3 minutes of crap. That's right. Mark Maron's Short Order News is coming up next.
College people, where are you? We got some college people there? There you go. Enjoy those years. Do it. Do it while you can, people. Before you go to college, they give you a brochure. Has anyone ever done anything in that brochure at the actual college? Have you sat on a lawn with an American Indian, an Asian guy, and a lesbian talking? Have you high-fived a guy in a wheelchair? Have you done that? Why don't they put some pictures in there of things you will actually see at the college? Where's the frat guy with a beer bong hanging out of his ass? Or how about a fat girl leaving a dorm room at 3 a.m. crying? Where's that
That's Dave Attell. Dave Attell will be here tomorrow night. I've known Dave many years, and this will be the first time I've been on radio with him. He'll be here, so hang out for that. We'll do my Latin mark tomorrow. We ran out of time. This is our first time on this new time schedule, which I think is nice. And in the future, when we get the show up and running for syndication, we'll be doing the full 2 hours for everybody around the world. How do you like that? Yes, sir. Also, before I do the short order news here, quickly I want to say that I thought The Sopranos was great. And I'm going to hang in. I don't mean to fall victim to a big cultural phenomenon, but man, once I got into this, I just crave it. And I swear to God, I watched the whole last season because I got it in a box from HBO. And as I said, it led to me calling my wife a bitch, jokingly, but apparently it was too loaded. And that led to a very bad Thai dinner. And she just didn't forgive me, even no matter how much I tried to rationalize it.
What was the context? How'd the bitch come up?
I was endearing. I was like, hey, you stupid bitch, kind of something like that.
What's wrong with that?
We do that sometimes, I thought, but apparently my sense of what I thought was that, because she was doing me a little, and I don't even want, because I know she's listening, I can't even, there's Mark, nothing I can do to defend this.
Mark, you go back and call her a bitch again.
No, there's nothing I can do to defend it. She's right. There's no reason that if you're with somebody you love, as a joke or not, you shouldn't be doing that.
So Mark, all right, quick, though, is Tony Soprano dead? What do you think?
No, he's not dead. He's been hit by his uncle, and
so
he's
not
dead.
So what do you
think's
going to happen to him?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think he's not going to die. I got to stop saying that, you know, it's like, all right, but I got to do the shorter news. Here we go. U.S. It just hit the music. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt told Americans to begin storing canned tuna and powdered milk under their beds in case of a deadly bird flu outbreak. Not coincidentally, that's exactly what's in the contents of senior citizen supplemental food packages Bush just cut from the budget. Toxicology reports show that the recently deported Slobodan Milosevic, is it Vich or Vich? Vich. May have taken unprescribed drugs unintentionally in order to worsen his condition. Gee, this kind of thing could ruin his reputation. Actor Sean Connery is recovering in the Bahamas after surgery to remove a tumor from his kidney. In a related story, Timothy Dalton is recovering after he was removed from the cardboard box he was living in. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. I'll tell you, I don't want to be Tony Soprano, but I know there's a Tony Soprano in me somewhere.
Like we never talk about the Flavor of Love show.
The Flavor of Love. I never watch it.
I love that show.
You do? He loves it too. Did I mention I saw a live possum in my backyard eating a banana peel?
Okay, now you're going to get dirty.
Yeah. Just eating a banana peel.
Woo! Flavor play!
The possum looked like a giant rat. Bye, sheeple.